I'm the assistant minister here, and it's a great joy to welcome you here to our carol service. We're going to read from Matthew chapter 2 now, and this is going to be where we're based just for the next little while together as we think about the real meaning of Christmas, as we try and unwrap what it is that Christmas is all about. But first, let's read Matthew chapter 2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose, and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. That'd be a great help if you kept that little bit in front of you. We'll be referring to it as we go. Now, I know that quite a few of the kids are down the front already. If any of the children who aren't down the front would like to come down the front, you'd be very welcome. There are a couple of points where I'm going to need your help, all right? But if you want to stay where you are, that's totally fine as well. Now, the nature of one of these, I'm going to come down, of these sorts of all-age carol services is that we get to do a little bit together, all right? So at times, I'm going to ask for some audience participation from young and old. And while you are totally allowed to not take part, it'd be great if you did, all right? So just feel free, no matter how old you are, let that inner child out. You can call out when you're invited to. It'll be a blast, all right? So we're going to start with a little bit of audience participation. So kids, I'm looking to you to give us a lead here, all right? But then anyone else, Christmas is a time where there are lots and lots of familiar stories, aren't there? Stories we know about and words from those stories that often, when we hear them, we think of maybe some of the readings we've read at home or in church, or of the carols, even some we've just been singing. So I'd love to know, what are some of the big words from Christmas stories that pop into your head right now? Who wants to stick their hand up and shout out a word that you think of when I say Christmas? What do you think? You can tell we're in Scotland, can't you? The kind of, even our kids. Go on, yes, big kid in the middle. Mary. All right, there we are. That gets the ball rolling. So Mary's a name that comes up with Christmas stories. What else? Sorry? Say it again. Baby. Yep, absolutely. Baby, definitely. That's a big Christmas word. Yes. Jesus. Absolutely, a very big Christmas word. One we're going to be thinking about a little bit more. Yes. Stars. Grace. Joseph. Couple more. Rufus. God, brilliant, go big, yes. Sorry? Shepherds, excellent, one more. King. Now that wasn't set up, but you know, king is the word we're thinking about this morning. All right, well done. I'll slip you a chocolate later. Look, the thing is, these words, which are so familiar to us, the danger of Christmas sometimes is that we read them, we sing them, we say them. If you're a Christian here today, you may even pray them, but we don't necessarily think about what it means. And so today we're going to be thinking about the relationship between Christmas and this word king. The reading we just had, the word king comes up a lot. And the first thing we're going to see in this first part of our talk is that Christmas tells us that the king has arrived. All right, we don't have a projector screen, so this is the best that my wife's creativity could do, which is significantly better than anything I would have come up with. All right, so the king has arrived. That is the point of this little bit of God's word. You see, if you look down with me, how many times we're told that the baby who is born is the king, Look at the little number two with me, saying, where is he who's been born king of the Jews? In verse 4, they use a funny word, Christ, and we're going to think about what that word means. It's one way of saying king. In verse 6, we're told that a ruler has come from Bethlehem, a king. And now this king is a king who's different to any other, and that word Christ helps us with that. We're going to have a bit of a king or a royal king and queen quiz to help us think about the difference between this king and any of the others. Now, there's a little Christmas present for you from us as a church family. Under your chair, either sticking to it or dropped on the floor if you sat down too firmly, is a brown envelope. Everyone grab your brown envelope, please. I take no responsibility for spelling errors. All right, this was a team effort. And open up your envelope, okay? Have a look. Okay, now, what you should have is a card with a flag on it. If you got the UK flag, I'm not making any political points, all right? It's simply just that we're going to think about that. You should have a card with a flag. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out the name of a king or a queen. If you think that that is the king or queen of the country that you are holding, you need to stand up, all right? If you can stand up, please stand up. No worries if you can't or if you're doing a je refuse. Yep, okay, we'll come to that one in a moment, all right? So, here is our first crowned head, King Felipe VI. He is king of, we've got a few votes for Spain, definitely you're right. So if you've got the Spanish flag, hold it up or stand up. Okay, great, sit yourselves down. Okay, so King Felipe, here's an easy one, all right? We'll give her her full name, Her Royal Majesty Elizabeth Alexandra Mary Windsor. We need to get this right, absolutely. Okay, great. UK, if you've got it, if you're an American with that, then you're welcome. All right, sit down. Okay, second one, slightly harder, although maybe the name will give it away. Carl the 16th Gustav is king of Sweden. All right, so Swedish flag, 16 Carl Gustav, so the Swedes need more imagination. Brilliant, thank you very much. And last one, I should say all of these are people or nationalities we have in our church family, so this one's quite close to home. King or Koning Willem Alexander is Dutch. Okay, so the flag of the Netherlands. Thank you for the willing people standing up. Honestly, these people just waving it, cheating. Okay, now, here's what you've got to remember. Each time I say the name of that country, you've got to stand up, okay? So if you've got that flag, each time I say it, you've got to stand up. All right, but take those kings and queens. Let's take Willem Alexander, okay? He's king of the Netherlands. All rise. All right, but he is not the king of Sweden. All right, thank you. So because he's the king of the Netherlands, he is not the king of Sweden. Ah, very good. All right, Queen Elizabeth, she's the queen of the United Kingdom. Samuel was too quick. All right, but therefore, because she's queen of our country, she is not the Queen of Spain. Excellent. We're getting the hang of it. Okay, so if you are the king or queen of one place for us, you're definitely not the king or queen of the other. But look at that little verse 4, that word used for Jesus. He's the Christ. It's just a word that means king. But this king is the long-promised king who God said would come. He would be king of Israel. That's what our passage says. He's king of the Jews. But because of that, he is actually the king of everywhere and everyone all the time. God promised that one day a good king would come from Israel who would make the world right again, who would fix the problem of our own hearts and who would fix the problem of the world. We're going to think about that in our second half. He's a surprising king, isn't he? He's born in a stable. He's not born in a palace. He's come to serve us and love us, not just take stuff from us and rule harshly over us. And we can see that he's the king of everyone, everywhere, because of our passage. Do you see how these wise men come? They come from none of the countries we've mentioned. They come from all over the world to listen to Jesus and to bow down in front of him. And if you wanted to, you could read in the Bible for yourself, however old you are, and you would see the line that Jesus is king of everybody, everywhere. And so if that is true, Christmas is the biggest and best news ever, because it tells us that the king has arrived. Okay, this time I'd like you to stay standing. It means that Jesus is actually the king of the Netherlands. It means he's the king of Spain. It means he is the king of Sweden. It means he is the king of the United Kingdom. And actually, as we look at it now, as we're all here, it means that he is the king of me, and he is the king of you as well. Christmas tells us the king has arrived. All right, do take a seat. Thank you for being such good sports. All right, now we're going to take a little pause. Christmas tells us that the king has arrived. And in our passage, the wise men see that, and they respond rightly to it. But before we read about that and hear about that, we're actually going to hear it sung about, because the children in our church family have been working really hard and are going to come and sing for us now. Brilliant. So we've just had sung to us about how people at the time responded to the news that the king had arrived. And that's what we're going to be thinking about in this second part of our talk, is looking at how it is that not only 2,000 years ago people arrived, but how today we can respond to this news. Just as a reminder, all right, let's just refresh ourselves. What is it that Christmas tells us? Looking to the kids. Christmas tells us that Jesus has arrived, the king has arrived. Brilliant. But Christmas also asks us a question, which we're going to now discover together. All right, because on the back of your cards, you'll see a word. All right, not just the picture of the flag, but there is a word on your card. Now, you have one word out of a sentence of four words. Okay, and that sentence is in fact our question that we're going to be answering in this second part of Christmas Unwrapped. Now, what you've got to do should be on your row. I'm not looking for just mass carnage running around, and I know some of you are competitive. Okay, what you need to do is find the other people in your row who have the matching question, the matching words, and come up with the question. When your group has the question, stick your hand up. It's a race. Okay? Oh, cheats in the middle. Fine, you're in trouble. 3, 2, 1, go! Okay, right, we've got people standing. You're not first, guys, I'm sorry. Okay, anyone else standing up? You're definitely, you've lost. All right, got to say that now. Okay, I reckon most of us have got there. Okay, so on three, we're all going to say what the question is of Christmas, and I shall reveal our second high-tech visual aid. Okay, the question Christmas asks us is, 3, 2, 1... Who wears the crown? Okay? It isn't just that the king has arrived. It is that we need to respond to that news. You see, Christmas says that Jesus wears the crown, but sometimes we don't let him do that. In fact, very often we don't. Now, the prize for winning the race is that you get to do Christmas crackers. Okay, now some of you started the race beforehand, and we're going to therefore give the prize to people down the front who waited for the start. All right, however, well done, you got it right. You have my respect. Okay, however, four of you down here, you were the first group to actually get the question. So, do you want to come on up? Our musicians of every age. Okay, here we are. Cracker each. You're going to cross arms? Can we figure that out? Can we all do it, do you think? Can you do it in a circle? There we go. They can sing, but this is advanced stuff. Okay, 3, 2, 1. There we go. Bravo. Now, anything in there is yours to keep, but put the crowns on, please. I'm not going to make you stand up the front. Becca, Becca. Here we go. There you go. Right. Go on. Crowns on. Have you got one, Kirsty? You do. Oh. See, Christmas crackers don't always work. Right. On your wrist, I'm afraid. There we are. Christmas wristband. Okay. Now, you sit yourselves down. Okay, we're going to come back to you with the crowns in a moment, okay? So keep them on. Don't relax just yet. All right, now, Jesus is God's king who's arrived, but different people in the story respond in different ways. Would you turn back with me just a page to our reading on Matthew chapter 2 so that everyone can see that? We see two different answers to this question. Christmas asks, who wears the crown? And the first person to be asked that question is Herod. And Herod, well, he answers it in one way that we will see. You see, Herod, we're told he is the king. He's Herod the king. We're told that twice. And he actually really likes being king. Because Herod is not happy at the news that a new king has arrived. Do you see little number three? It says, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Now, do you know anyone who, when they're in a bad mood, maybe they get up a bit grumpy in the morning, or, you know, exams haven't gone quite as well as they might have done for those who are doing exams. Do you know someone who, if they're in a bad mood, everyone else gets in a bad mood around them? I'm sure you do know people like that, who, when they're upset, they upset everyone. And Herod was like that to an alarming degree. When Herod was angry, not only his family knew about it, but the whole of Jerusalem. And the reason he is angry is because he does not want to give Jesus the crown. Herod actually is a little picture to us of our attitude that the Bible calls sin. The fact that we naturally, just like Herod actually, like to stay king of our own lives. So imagine that I said to Grace, Grace, I really like your crown. You need to give me your crown. No. You see, there's a very good illustration. Grace, just flat refusal. No, I don't want to give you the crown. Now, frankly, Grace's crown wouldn't fit on my head. That's the problem with having an enormous head when it comes to Christmas. But when we say no to Jesus, that's a much more serious thing. That word I use, sin, it's one the Bible uses lots. You could think of it in an easy little kind of poem almost, or a little memory game. Sin, S, shove off God. Shove off Jesus, I don't want you. I'm in charge. I'm king, I'm going to keep my crown for myself. N, no to you. You see, Herod says no to Jesus. He says, shove off. He says, I'm in charge. I'm the king. He says later in the passage that he wants to worship Jesus. But actually, he just wants to know where Jesus is so that he can kill him. You could read that just in the next bit of the Bible. That's what Herod wants to do. And that is one response that we can make to Jesus today. We could say no. But you know, Jesus the king came to help us to love God, to not say no to him. In fact, this king came to take the punishment we deserve for saying no to Jesus. He came to do that for us. And anyone who trusts in him, well, he'll do that for you too. He'll be your king, and he will forgive you and love you. So there's one answer to the question, who wears the crown? The second answer, though, the better answer, the one that Matthew, our storyteller, wants us to have, is in the wise men. Okay, look down with me. What have the wise men done? They say, little number two, we have come to worship Jesus. They say again, or we're told again, little number 11, they fell down and worshipped him. Worship isn't just a word that you might think you meet in church. It actually means something about their hearts. And it means something that they did. So I want to ask our crown wearers to stand up again, please. Okay, come over here. You can come up on the little stage. Okay, now, Rachel, you're being a very good sport. Going into the house, we're told, the wise men fell down and worshipped Jesus. The word for worship means they bowed down low before Jesus, and they took off their crowns and they put them at his feet. Can you guys go down low? Pop your crowns on the ground. Brilliant. Thank you very much. You guys, you can go and sit down now if you want. Thank you. No, leave the crowns. Leave the crowns. You can get them at the end. You can get them at the end. You see, these wise men, they actually maybe were kings themselves. They certainly were very clever. They were wise. They were wealthy. They'd come from the far lands of the East. But they heard, as it were, this question, who wears the crown? And they said, Jesus does. This baby does. This king does. This king of the world, this king of me, I'm going to give him my crown. They give him all of their gifts, precious, valuable things. They're happy. Do you see that in verse 10? They rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. It's just grown-up language for saying they were really, really thrilled that they had met this king. And they wanted to listen to him and to follow him. You see, that is the best response to this question. Christmas says the king has arrived. Christmas asks, who wears the crown? And the answer we're all to give, we're told, is to say, well, Jesus wears the crown. And we're going to take our crown, not just a paper one, but us saying, I'm king of my life. And we're going to put it down at Jesus' feet. So here's a question for you. However old you are, whether you're listening as a really young person, whether you're listening as an older one, who wears the crown of your life? Do you try and be king yourself? I know so often I can do that. Or do you say, no, you know something? The king has arrived. He's better than me. He loves me. And so I'm going to give him my crown, and I am going to follow him. You can do that today, however old you are. Maybe it might be even for the very first time. But that is what Christmas tells us. The king's here. And it asks us and encourages us to give him the crown. It's what our last carol is all about. We're going to sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing. It's one of my absolute favorite Christmas carols. But it's because of what it tells us. You see, it says what we've just been thinking about. Guys, the musicians can come on up. That's absolutely fine. It says the king is here. It says, listen, hark, the herald angels, they sing glory to the newborn king. But it also encourages us to give him glory, to worship him, to bow down, to give him the crown. So as we sing this song, and for the rest of our Christmases together, whatever you're doing, and I hope you have a wonderful Christmas, wherever in the world you are, whoever you spend it with, let's think about the fact the king has arrived, and let's give him our crowns. If the band are ready, we're going to stand and sing. Let me just wish you a very Merry Christmas. Let's stand and sing Hark the Herald Angels.